Good afternoon and welcome to The Boldness on 3CR 8:55 AM. The Boldness is about lived experience of disability and my name is Raf. This is all part of a summer series where The Boldness is talking with a number of the ambassadors for International Day of Disability. And today we have been joined by Isabella Chout, who is the CEO of the Youth Disability Advocacy Network. Welcome to The Boldness, Isabella. How are you doing there?
Yeah, good. Thank you, Raf. Thank you so much for having me.
Look, it is going. We're here for a very important topic to discuss there. Your role as an ambassador. So we're going to find out a little bit about Isabella Chout over what's important to Isabella. So tell us about yourself.
Yeah, sounds good, Rap. So my name's Isabella Chout. I use they, them pronouns. And first and foremost, I am a living experience advocate, which means I use the experiences that I have from my life to advocate for changes within society. So I live with chronic illness, mental ill health, multi-disabled. I'm also a queer person of colour. And I have been really, really privileged in this space to be able to create community spaces and platform other people with disabilities. So, some of the things that I've been able to do on my own terms are things like founding Disability Pride Festival, WA's first, back in 2024. I also started the Lived Experience newsletter, which is around creating spaces and information for young people to share their living experience. And I'm very privileged now to be the CEO of the Youth Disability Advocacy Network, which is the leading advocacy body for young people with disability here in Western Australia.
Well, Isabella, we really don't need to do much more of this interview because you're eminently qualified and it's going to be really, really interesting to learn a lot more about this. And I'm going to go slightly off script a bit later on and ask you a question that is directly related to what we've been talking about. Now, Isabella, what are your experiences in the workplace?
Yeah, look, that's a great question. And I think that my journey and my story with the workplace really articulates why it's so important to have inclusive employment. One of the chronic illnesses that I live with is myalgic encephalitis, which is more commonly known as chronic fatigue syndrome. So I was diagnosed with that in late high school, which is around the time where a lot of young people start getting work and start getting jobs. I had a few different casual positions. I also live with something called borderline personality disorder, which means that I can have a lot of internal struggle around regulating and consistency and all those sorts of things. So, yeah, I guess when I was young and I was first entering the workforce, I had a really, really difficult time because I didn't understand a lot of the social expectations that people have of you when you're entering a workforce, such as, you know, understanding power dynamics in a room or understanding the process of how you attend a meeting. But I also found that because I was frequently unwell, that I would stop getting shifts from places because even though there's nothing I can do about not being well, as a business, people didn't want to employ people who can't consistently turn up at shifts at times. So yeah, when I was early days, employment, it was something that I thought was beyond reach. I think I graduated university thinking that I'd only ever be able to work 10 to 15 hours a week. I'm very, very lucky to now be working at a disabled people's organization where, you know, inclusion and access is built in from the start. You know, a small example is every time we start a meeting, we have a capacity check-in and we say, what do you need to be able to fully engage in the conversation today? We have staff with migraines. So who find the overhead lighting quite intense. So we've put theatre gels on them, so it's reduced how stark they are. I think that through that and through flexible working arrangements and through meeting me where I'm at, I'm now able to work almost full-time as a CEO, which is something beyond my wildest dreams when I first entered the workforce.
Isabella, do you think people with a disability are treated differently to other people in the community?
Absolutely. Look, we hear from so many young people through the programs that we run at the Youth Disability Advocacy Network, also called YDAN, so I refer to it like that moving forward. But we have a program called Unleashed, which is around supporting young people into employment through learning about how to find work for your needs and for your passions. The basic things like writing a resume, but also the nuance of having disability and going, okay, you've written a resume, you've got a great cover letter, you've got an interview, you're going to go into the interview and perhaps people will clock that you're disabled. So how do we navigate that? And one of the things that we hear from young people is that they either get to the interview stage and then they don't hear back. They get through and get the job. And then when they ask for accommodations in the workplace, they stop getting shifts, or they don't even make it through the initial phases. And a lot of that is due to the fact that when people are young and they've got disabilities, they're often managing their disabilities and managing their health at the same time where their non-disabled peers are starting to get work at places like Macca's and Kmart. And so you have a lot of young people with disability who are not able to get employment. I think as well, one of my own living experiences that just showcases how we're treated differently is I am a ambulant wheelchair or walker user. So sometimes I use them, sometimes I don't use them. And it's really interesting that in the same spaces that I rock up with, some days when I'm using my cane or my walker, people will treat me differently. People will think that I can't do anything. They'll be trying to be overly helpful and cater to me, but almost in an infantilizing way. So I think that those experiences really showcase that people with disability have a different experience and are treated differently within community.
Isabella, it sounds like you're right on the money about how people can be treated very, very, very differently in the community. Now, I notice that there's a fantastic quote by Laura Hershey, "Nothing about us without us." Who are the people that have influenced you on your journey, Isabella?
Yeah, so I think that there's been a number of people. Firstly, I would say many, many advocates and disabled people from my own community, peers, colleagues. There's a fantastic, fierce advocate from Boorloo called Annika Bott, and they are a fantastic physical disability and limb difference advocate, and they've been very instrumental in my journey. But I also think on a more broad level or a nationwide level, there are some particular disabled advocates who are queer people of colour, non-binary trans people who I really resonate with. So Emily Unity is one, and Aki No is another one. And these people, Aki No was actually an International Day of People with Disability ambassador a couple of years ago, and I got to meet them when I was an ambassador this year, which was such a highlight. But really just seeing what we can achieve and what people who look like me and have similar experiences to me can achieve has been instrumental. And then, you know, going again more broadly and then thinking globally, I just want to pay my respects to the great disabled ancestor Alice Wong and many other disabled writers and advocates. I think that as disabled people, we really stand on the shoulders of giants. You know, we have had so many incredible activists who have paved the way so that we can live in the world that we do today and that we can keep pushing for our people and for our movement.
This is sounding better and better, but it's actually time for us to play some community service announcements. Welcome back to the Boldness on 3CR 8:55 a.m. for the summer series featuring the ambassadors of International Day of Disability. My name is Raf, and we are talking with Isabella Chout around their experiences. And are we having a good time so far, Isabella? Do you think you're getting any messages out there?
We are absolutely having a good time, Raf, and I hope I'm getting some messages out there. But if not, you know, it's been wonderful to chat to you.
That is very, very, very kind for you. Now, what does being an ambassador for International Day of Disability mean to you?
Yeah, that's a great question. Look, I've had an interesting journey where when I was a young person, I didn't really identify with the disabled community. And so I really came from an outside perspective. And now that I'm working within community and I'm really proudly disabled, I've learned so much, not just about community and culture, but also about how the systems work. And I think what it's shown me is that people who are not disabled, who don't have any sort of connections to disability or don't think that they yet have connections to disability, have no idea what sort of world we navigate as disabled people. So I think it's really a wonderful opportunity for me to share my culture and community with the general public so that they can get a glimpse of the world that we live in. And I think it's really important to platform the voices of a diverse group of people with disability. Because it shows that we are not a monolith. We all have different ideas. We all have different ways of existing in this world. But at the end of the day, you know, we are all human. And I think that being able to share that message and go, you know what, we are all the same. Why don't we think about a better future for all of us and for non-disabled people to understand that when access is built in from the start, and we start thinking about access in how we move through the world becomes better and more inclusive for everyone, not just people with disability. You know, I often think about the people who invented texting, who were people who were deaf and wanted to communicate, and now everyone texts. Or I think about, you know, when we put ramps in, you know, it's helpful for people, families with strollers, and it's helpful for delivery drivers. But if we think more than just our physical access and we start thinking about cultural access and we start thinking about sensory access, we start realizing that a lot of people benefit from things like low mood lighting, or a lot of people benefit from having signs on food saying what ingredients are in the food. You know, whilst it might seem that people with disability have all these quote-unquote special needs, I just like to think that every human has needs. It's just that people without disabilities' needs are being catered to in society, and we as disabled people have to work a bit hard to get our needs recognised. That kind of went on a tangent, sorry.
I love it when people expand their answers, talking about what is actually access and inclusion means, because it really does lead into that next question. How should people in the community treat people with a disability? But we've actually, Isabella, I know that you've actually expanded about the practical ways how people can treat people with a disability. Can you actually put that in terms of what are the values and principles behind it instead this time?
Yeah, absolutely. I guess just to start off again, we are all human. We are all deserving of respect. Like every human, we have things that can be tricky for us, and we also have things that we're good at. So I think we really deserve compassion for people to listen to us. I think we deserve patience and kindness. And I think that, you know, people in the community should treat people with disability how they would like to be treated, which sounds cliche, but there's so many small things that I think that people don't realize that they might be alienating people. For example, if I choose to use a cane on one day because I'm low energy and I need that support, sometimes I'll have people go, oh, what's wrong with your legs? Or tell me about why you're using this. And, you know, to a non-disabled person, that's the same as going up to them and saying, give me your medical history. I'd like to see the notes, you know? So I think that, again, we deserve respect. We deserve compassion, kindness, and patience.
Well, Isabella, I have just heard you. Isabella, the boldness was really looking to actually specifically interview you around November. What we're going to, this big event, it's about White Knight, which is about building a much better community where women specifically are safe. The boldness would be very, very interested to hear from you as your role of an ambassador in terms of respect and being polite and identifying as a member of the LGBTQIA+ community. What are your specific thoughts as a person, as a disability, why having that, why it's really important that there is less violence in the community?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, I think that when it comes down to the crux of things, violence has no place in our community. I think that if you put the lens of disability onto violence, we know that people with disability are 2 times more likely to experience family domestic violence. We also know that many people who experience FDV end up becoming disabled or acquiring a disability from that experience, from surviving. And I think that when you put another layered lens on top of disability and violence of being queer in the LGBTQIA+ community, we get really specific and nuanced experiences at quite high rates for quite vulnerable people. And there's just a lack of services and community supports for queer disabled people to access or escape from FDV. So I think it's a really important conversation to have. In WA, we currently have 16 days in WA, which is highlighting the experiences and having a conversation around FDV. So I think it's very timely to have this conversation, but very important to understand that many people with disability are multiply marginalized because of the way that they either experience the world or through, you know, the way that their brain works and perhaps being particularly vulnerable to manipulation and abuse. And also through having, some people with disability who have restricted mobility or reduced capacities to escape abuse is another layer that we need to consider. And then on top of all of that, we also need to think about how people with disability, you know, if we start talking about education and employment stats and how people with disability aren't graduating from high school or going to university or getting employment at the same rates, so they're less financially able to escape abuse. So many, many different lenses, but thank you for bringing up that topic.
Isabella, with the 16-day campaign, 3CR did do a big radio series on it as part of it, and that's exactly why I was hoping that the boldness was going to be able to dedicate a whole show talking with you about that really, really important topic. What is the one thing Australia should do? It's one thing to recognise what people with a disability do in the community.
I think people don't recognize that there's disabled culture because they aren't open to seeing it. So I think one thing you can do is go and follow disabled creators, follow the other International Day of People with Disability ambassadors. A few people I can suggest that you follow is Sonny Jane Wise, the lived experience educator, Laura Pettinezzo, who is a disabled writer, Rosie Putland, who's just started Crip Culture, a podcast, and is doing some fantastic work with Children and Young People with Disability Australia, Lane Dixon, who is a digital space expert. Kagan Lane is doing a lot in the equity and inclusion space. So go and follow these people and really embrace and learn and understand that we are a culture. There is knowledge, there is history.
Fantastic. Now, Isabella, finally, what is the best way for people to contact you? Through the Youth Disability Advocacy Network?
Yeah, so if you want to contact me personally, you can reach out on Instagram or LinkedIn, although I'm not very good at LinkedIn. However, if you want to reach out to me in a personal capacity or you can't find me on those other platforms, reach out to the Youth Disability Advocacy Network at www.ydan.com.au. That's www.ydan.com.au. Or via any online social media platform, just look up the Youth Disability Advocacy Network.
The Boldness has been talking with Isabella Chout, who is one of the ambassadors for International Day of Disability. Thank you for your time, Isabella.
Thank you so much, Ralph. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Good afternoon, and welcome to The Boldness on 3CR, 8:55 a.m., The Boldness is about lived experience of disability, and my name is Raf. Now, on this summer series, we're talking with the International Day of Disability Ambassadors, and today we have the pleasure of talking with Marie Jenner. How are you doing there, Marie?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks, Raf. It's nice and warm here where I am. So not too bad at all. I can feel summer.
Well, that must be Queensland.
Not quite. It's on the beautiful central coast on Darkinjun country, which is just above Sydney, an hour.
Right. Now, is that Marie, tell us about yourself.
I am a woman. My pronouns are she, her, and a short stature. Or living with dwarfism. So I'm the height of a roughly an 8-year-old child. So I'm an adult. A young girl said to me one day, and I keep repeating this because I love it. She saw me approximately, I think she was about 7, and she said, "You've grown up little." And I said, "That's exactly what I've done. I've grown up, but I'm not tall like your dad. I'm little." Dad was a bit, but I said, "No, Dad." That was a wonderful response. And, so I live with short stature, as we prefer to call it here in Australia, or we also use the term dwarfism. I'm the height of a child, but I'm an adult. So I've had to navigate a world that's been built for average height people. And I'd rather say average height than normal height. So just because I feel that it's important, language matters. So I navigate and live in a world built for average height people, but I also have to navigate people's attitudes and manage and challenge that as well. So it's the thinking part of it too.
And I am actually one of those people that fall outside what is called average height. I am tall, and people look up. They look up, yes. And they look up, and sometimes I get described as a giraffe.
So you're a tall stature, and sometimes I say to the children, "Well, I'm very short stature." So maybe for you, I'd say you're very tall stature. But yeah, I use that.
A lot of people in the community think I am much taller than what I am, and I've also got a very big, solid build on me, which means people can get very intimidated, especially when I stand up. So I like to sit down and come down to people's height to help keep them at ease and make sure they are comfortable.
That's
with
great.
Disability, that's extremely important, especially if people are using mobility aids or they identify as short statured.
Exactly.
So they don't look down.
Yeah. No. And I love it that you're considerate like that, because I have people that people will now feel comfortable to say, Marie, would you like me to sit down? And I said, I'd love you to, if you don't mind sitting. And then someone will say, would it be okay if I went on my knees? I said, as long as you're comfortable, because then I can see eye to eye. I find it hard to have to look up to someone. And sometimes I also can't hear so well, but that's me. And I love it that you're considering others. And others, to ask people, I think, I always say to people, it's always good to ask how you can help or assist. Don't assume straight away. Yeah.
Now, Marie, this leads into, what are your experiences in the workplace?
Oh, I've had vast experience, because I'm in my senior years. I'm the oldest of the ambassador team. And I was quite chuffed when I saw how young the others are. But it's a good balance, and in that regard. With the work experience side of things, when I was first, my first career, because I've had a few career paths, it was challenging just to get into it because of the mindset. First off, with the career guidance counsellor, I wanted to be a nurse. And they immediately looked at my height and not at my grades of school at the time, which I had, and said that I wouldn't be able to do that. But I learned early that I had to challenge this, follow things up and see. I eventually did become a nurse and I registered, but my colleagues within the workplace were fantastic. And this is what the matron at the time that employed me from a children's hospital in Sydney, where the big Westmead Hospital now stands, was a very small children's hospital at the time. And she said, your colleagues will help you and you will help them. You'll work together. That was for the first 3 months trial, but that's how we worked. Everybody works as a team. So it was actually a great profession first to get into, because you did that teamwork and help one another. I then later on became an educator, and again, the people that I worked with. So it was more me challenging to get in, and that's the way. And when I went to work at the State Library later, I studied photography for 4 years at Sydney TAFE. And I remember my fellow students assisting me as I would assist them. And then I went for a job at the State Library of New South Wales. I applied, and I say to the, because I do inclusion programs now in schools, I work part-time, and I love it when I say to the children, do you think I wrote on my job application that I had short stature then? Because this was a very long time ago. But they said, no, you don't have to do that because it doesn't matter, which is wonderful. But then another child would say, yes, because they need to get ready and prepare for you, which is also a great outcome. But no, I didn't write it because I didn't want them to disregard me before I had a chance to show and talk. So that employer at the time, she was the supervisor at the State Library. She saw me when I went in for the interview, and she said, okay, Marie, you've answered all the questions. We've done the interview. We'll look around the studio, which is what we did in the dark room, because in those days it was chemistry, film and paper. It wasn't digital. This is the late 80s. She said to me, okay, you tell me now how you'll do the job. And I said, I need a step stool here. I need this in the studio. And I got it. And I ended up working there for 12 years. She left a few years later. I became photographic supervisor, and then I became the photographic manager. It's the attitude, I think, too, of the person that's employing.
Marie, do you think that people with a disability are treated differently to other people in the community.
Definitely. I live with it. There's some good ways and there's not good ways. I think to begin with, people in the community tend to be a little bit patronising. They seem to see me out and about or sometimes get into my car and say, wow, you can drive. I said, yep, I can drive. I can do a lot of things. The most important thing I think I want to be treated with is respect and kindness. And I think it's for everybody. I like it when people come up to me in the supermarket and see me standing there, maybe trying to work out which one I want. It's on a shelf, and most shelves are higher than me, being the height that I am. And they come over and say, do you mind, but could I help you? And I said, yeah, I'd love you to. I was actually going to ask in a minute, but yeah, could you get that down? Because the world's not built for me. Supermarket shelves are certain heights. And, you know, other people would ask you, I think, Raph, to help get things down from the supermarket shelf. Yeah, I'd certainly be asking you if you were there in the aisle. I love it when people ask first, can they help me? And that, rather than make an assumption, as I said that before, I think it's respect and kindness. The best thing I want is people to value and appreciate our disabilities as just part of the diversity of humans, of society, of the world. We look at the animal kingdom and we look at the diversities in relation to what we have with the dogs and the different species. And we look at the fish and the sea life. And we look at the cats, from tigers down to little kittens that we, pussy cats we have in our houses. And as I say to the children, what would it be like if we only had one breed of dog? And they'd say, that would be so boring. And I said, exactly. So people are all different sizes as well. It's valuing us as an important, integral part of the community.
Well, as said, Marie, I'd like to include the word dignity into that as well.
Yes.
And
definitely,
that is actually extremely important, because that embraces that every person, like a quote which someone from a long time ago said to me, they have many abilities and one disability. Let's focus on what people can do. Now, Marie, who are the people that have influenced you on your journey?
Okay, well, I think the first one would be my mother. She was very, in the early days, because of being bullied at school, she sought, and the local GP, because I grew up in a country town, country New South Wales, and so my condition's very rare. Well, I mean, having dwarfism is rare, and I'm the only person in my family. So therefore, nobody else in my family or my country town has short stature or dwarfism. So my mum was very proactive when I was saying I didn't want to go to school. She spoke to the local GP and he said, well, Marie needs to learn early to address this. So she needs to learn. It's going to happen right through her life because her difference, or I say my disability, which is my short stature, my dwarfism, is extremely visible. People see it straight away. And Marie needs to learn and equip herself with that ability to speak up, speak out. So Mum's been a big support. She was initially there with the GP. And I think when I connected with the short stature community, to have the older members of the community looking at, you know, what they were doing. And of course, at the time, the careers weren't as varied because the opportunities, unfortunately, because as I said, I'm an elder of the community now myself. To see what they were doing and they were achieving was a great role model for me as well. And then, of course, was also seeing other people become nurses and doctors and things like this and photographers. And I went, I could do that. I think I will do that. So I think it's just having that encouragement, but having the people around you that give you the encouragement, but not so much tell you what to do, but give you the support to do what you want to do, and that confirmation or affirmation in that regard. But it's, yeah. And I think the most important thing is I think I've got great allyship with me. And that's where I say to the children in the schools, be an ally for one another. We all have different lived experiences, right? So therefore, you know, just have one another's back. We don't have to be everybody's friend, but just to look out for one another.
Marie, what does being an ambassador for International Day of Disability mean to you?
I thought that was a great voice, an opportunity to have these conversations. I've had quite a few radio interviews. I've had different people generating my own social media, but also with, as a result of the conversations and things that my fellow ambassadors have generated and that. But to keep that conversation happening, as I say, the 3rd of December is the day of the international, the UN recognized day around the world for people with disability, but we need it, the conversation, to keep happening every day. So being an ambassador, I'll keep talking about it. I've been talking about it, and I think it just gave me a wider voice. People have seen me in the street, maybe, and they know who I am. And when I've been on the local radio, or I was on Newcastle radio, I had a friend that lives in Newcastle message me and say, hey, Marie, I heard you. That was great. And I think it's people reaching out from different parts of the country saying, I heard you. I saw you on your clip, or we showed this at our event today. And I felt great. The messages and that are getting out. But I'd like it to be that every day people have those conversations, are aware of the importance of allyship and being inclusive.
Marie, how should people in the community treat people with a disability?
Yeah, as we said before, dignity, kindness and respect. Value people with disability as part of human society and diversity. We all have strengths. We do things in different ways. There's no one way for doing something. And I think the biggest thing that, as I say to the children and make people aware, ramps, accessibility, a lot of tech was designed for people with disability. People, non-disabled people, benefit from these assistive technologies, whether it be a ramp, or Siri on the phone that will tell you the time, speech to text and text-to-speech technologies. A lot of these technologies were designed for people with lived experience of disability, but non-disabled people get the benefit of it as well.
And Marie, how can Australia better include people with a disability?
Have an inclusive mindset. If you're an employer or you recruit, if you recruit people, make sure your recruitment practice is accessible for everybody. Some people are not able to apply for a job one way. There are many different ways that people can submit a job application. To look at the accessibility of your website, also your building, have a ramp as opposed to steps. As I say to children, if there's a ramp outside of a shop, the person in the wheelchair can't get in. The parent with the child in the pram, are they going to go inside and leave the pram and the child outside? It's too hard to take the child in maybe without the pram. The elderly person on the mobility scooter, will they go into the business? No. The person that maybe for the time being has become disabled and is on crutches, are they going to go in? It'll be too hard. Make your business accessible. And also have an inclusive and accessible like mindset and approach to your business or your employment.
What is the one thing that Australia should do to recognise what people with a disability do in the community?
What I would like is my main message when we had the morning tea with the minister for the NDIS down at Parliament House last week was representation in media, in advertisements, in our soaps of people with lived experience of disability. We make up 20% of the population of Australia. It's the one minority group that anybody becomes. You can become disabled at any time in your life that people that are not disabled will join. As we get older, as I say to the children, I hope you do become disabled, meaning I hope you live a long life, because as you get older, you need to use some assistance, whether it's a walker, hearing aids, glasses, which I wear here now, which I had to start wearing when I got into my 40s. That, yeah, it's to be inclusive. And so that's for inclusive. Represent people with disability in your business, on the television screens, yeah, all around. Because we're here, we're part of society. We don't go away.
Marie, finally, what is the best way for people to contact you?
On social media, it's my name. So it's Marie Jenner, and I'm on Instagram.
I'd like to thank all the ambassadors for International Day of Disability for appearing on this summer series, Meet the Ambassadors of International Day of Disability, thanking them very much for the time. I would like to thank Good Talent Media for the role they played in facilitating the interviews. Most of all, The Boldness would like to wish everyone a fantastic, happy new year. Keep listening to 3CR. Let's go out with a song, Staff Bender Billy Lily by Jambula. Keep listening to 3CR, and if you don't think the revolution has started, you've been listening to the wrong station. This is 3CR, Voice of the People. Thank you for joining me today.